Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 204. I sound a bit croaky, don't I? I've got a bit of a bad throat at the moment. I think the hay fever might be kicking in. But that's not a fascinating way to start a podcast, is it? This week's guest is Jamali Maddox, and it's one of my favourite chats I've had. And it's been killing me, if I'm honest, because we recorded this about 2 months ago, and I don't normally sit on them for that long. But all the other podcasts I've had recently have been kind of time-specific and time-sensitive. And Jamali's tour that we talk about a little bit isn't until later in the year. I mean, none of this is that interesting, but that's the reason I thought, okay, that's fine to hold off a bit, but it kept going back and back and back, and yeah. But it's finally here, and it's great. We recorded it at the Hoxton Bar and Kitchen on Hoxton Square, which is where the Hardcore Listing guys do their live shows. It was a great chat. I'd binged Jamali's amazing series, and we talk about it a fair bit, but he did an amazing series called Hate Thy Neighbour, and it's fantastic. It's on Vice, so you can watch it at vice.com. It is on demand, I think, on a lot of Sky boxes and things like that as well. Honestly, it's so good. I recommend it highly. So yeah, that's great. This week's podcast is another week where it's a double. So last week I had Beans on Toast and Nick Hawks, and they both went down a treat. It was great to see people excited about the Nick Hawks episode after they'd heard it, because a lot of people weren't overly familiar with his name, but the dude signed The Prodigy and started XL and just has got so many cool stories and interesting views on the music industry and music and the entertainment industry, and it's a great one. And this week it's a similar one where I had the great opportunity to chat to two amazing young ladies, Coralie Fargay and Matilda Lutz, who've done this great film called Revenge. It's in the cinemas from Friday, May the 11th. And it's fantastic. It currently has 100% on Rotten Tomato. It's really good. It's a dark, gory revenge movie, and it's fantastic. But I'll be talking to them about that a lot on Friday. I should mention, today's podcast is brought to you by speechdevelopmentrecords.com. By the time this goes to air, we might have sold out, but we've recently brought the denim jackets back in stock with the big patch on the back, the "We may not be for you and that's fine" slogan. They've been flying out again. At time of recording, we're down to our last 50 or so, but they may have all gone by the time you go and look there. But head over to speechdevelopmentrecords.com. Also, I can tell you now, this is exciting. I'll do a bit of a pause because some of you might fast forward over the advert bit, so just let you get back. We're not doing an advert anymore. On Saturday, it's the 10-year anniversary of Angles by myself and Dan Lesac. And that was our debut album. It's the one that thrust us into the limelight and gave us a career, essentially. So for that, at speechdevelopmentrecords.com, we're going to have a very limited run of 100 copies of a new purple vinyl press of Angles. So swoop and get them. They're all going to be signed. The plan is to put them up on Saturday morning. If you're clever, it might be worth having a look on Friday night, because I don't know if anyone is going to want to get up early on Saturday morning to update the web store. That's just my instinct. I'm not saying that's a guarantee, but the guys who run the web store are lovely, and we're not slave masters, so we're not going to be like, get up at 6 o'clock on Saturday morning, so they might put it up before they go to bed. So yeah, just saying, that's worth a look. And we've also got a brand new t-shirt, which is, again, limited edition. It's black and gold, it's beautiful, it's a new Heggy image, and for some reason, through no prompting, he decided to draw me and Dan Lesac as if we're in the film Ghost, and Dan is Demi Moore, and I'm topless Patrick Swayze, behind him as we make clay pots or vases or whatever she's making. So yeah, it's batshit, it's weird, but I'd suggest heading over to speechofanimalorecords.com and swooping things up over the weekend. But in addition to that, if you don't want to buy anything, that's fine. You've supported for years. You're lovely. You're beautiful. What we're going to be doing is Dan Sack has a Twitch channel. I'm going to be going to Dan's house on Saturday. We've not confirmed times yet, but it'll be for a good 4 or 5 hours. And we're going to be on his Twitch channel doing Dan Lesak versus Scroobius Pip at computer games. So I'll be playing him all sorts of games. We'll be beating each other up. We'll be racing. We'll be doing all sorts of stuff, I think. And we will also be answering your questions and chatting. So if you want to talk to us, you could go on there and leave messages and we'll answer them. If you've got anything you want to say about, ask about our career, about Angles as an album, about individual songs, about our tours back in the day, all of that stuff, come on and chat, and we're going to be having a good old reminisce and battle. So yeah, that's Twitch, and you need to just look up Dan Lesak, I guess. There'll be links to it on Dan Lesak's Twitter page and social media in general. So yeah, we're doing all of that on Saturday. It's exciting. There's loads. You can come and watch us. You can engage for free. You can spend money. Loads of things to do. Back to this week's podcast. As I said, I've been waiting to release this for a while, and there's been a lot of hype. I've teased it a few times. I know Chili Ray McCormack, who was on the Dark Summer shoot, was incredibly excited about this one. Every time I've teased it, I've had people going, "Oh, I can't wait for that." And then in reality, most of the times, I pushed it back another week or two because it's not time sensitive. But it is great. Just have a listen. I was about to do his tour dates here, but I'll tell you his tour dates at the end and let you just get into the podcast. This is episode, what number was it? 204 with the wonderful Jamali Maddox. Right, I'm joined by Jamali Maddox. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I like how we didn't fuck around with this.
No.
Because you messaged me.
Yeah, we literally, it's been under a week.
It's under a week, mate.
Since we got in touch. I was really pleased, because it's a weird thing. Like people often say with podcasts, "Oh, I feel like I know you because I listen to your podcast." I'm feeling that with you because of Hate Thy Neighbour. I've watched them all. I love it. It's so casual and personal that I feel like I know you, and I felt a bit bad because I thought, also, you remind me of a mate of mine, Gaz Khan. And then you came in and you said, "Oh, you know my boy Gaz." I was like, "Well, there you go. I feel okay about liking him now." Going, you're brown beard with beards. You know, it's like, but yeah.
So, No. Yeah, I know Gaz, man. Gaz, one of them dudes where, like, you know when someone tells you a story about Guz, you go, "Yeah, that's totally Guz." Yeah. Where, like, it's not like everything, because like, someone was telling me, another comics with Neil Patel was telling me how Guz bullied him into buying these trainers that he would never wear. Yeah. And I can imagine Guz saying, "Come on, fam, just buy the trainers, isn't
it? Just get them."
Yeah.
I love it. He messaged me yesterday because we were in this film and we got the premiere. As we record this, we got the premiere tomorrow on Tuesday. And on Sunday last night, he messaged me going, "I can't wait, man. See you Monday." And I had twins to go, "It's Tuesday, Guz." He was like, "Yeah,
it's not great with a diary, is he?
Not great with a diary."
Oh, Guz. But no, yeah, man. I'm looking forward to watching that film. It's got Dave Johns in it.
Yeah, it's got Dave Johns. It's got Stevie Graham. It's got, yeah, the cast is ridiculous. The
film looks great, man.
And me and Guz have been laughing. And by the time this goes out, it's okay to talk about. Because we swear that we're in it for like 2 minutes. And we're doing tons of press and they've done special posters for us.
I've seen your promo.
And we're like, all right, well, we're all over this. Yeah. But again, we're honestly, like, we've been joking that they've CGI'd us in extra scenes. And we've not said any of this publicly yet because we don't want to downplay it. But I've not seen it.
They've got stand-ins and shit. It's just, exactly. it's like the back of your head, but it ain't your head.
The backs of our head constantly. And they've just cut lines from Guz's stand-up and my song. But yeah, it's good to have you. I've been watching Hate Thy Neighbour a lot and I think it's great. And that's what kind of spawned this. But before we get into this, I want to kind of talk about you and your upbringing and your life, because it's not something
I like it when I go to Google someone to do some research and there's I can't nothing find
there.
Much out.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that there's nothing there. Like, I've always, like, you know what, yeah, like, I kind of don't like that thing of everyone's information being out there.
Yeah.
There's some shit that you just don't need to know unless you come and ask me.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't think that, you know, it needs to be out there, like, you know, because people ask me, like, what school you go to and all this type of shit. And it's like, what?
What relevance?
Yeah, what relevance to anyone's, completely. You know, and it's like, because, you know, if you go on Google and you type in the beginning part of my name and it has all the hits of what people want to find out.
Yeah.
It's some of the stuff on there, it's like, why do you give a shit?
Really?
Yeah.
But that's what's kind of interesting. It's what works on Hate Thy Neighbour. And for anyone who doesn't know, Hate Thy Neighbour is on Viceland. It's a Vice kind of documentary series.
Yeah.
It's also on Sky and all this kind of thing on demand. And you go around...
And illegal streaming sites.
And illegal streaming sites, all sorts. That shit. I mean, I was waiting patiently for different ones to come up on Sky, and then I realised I could watch them all on Vice for free anyway.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't even need to illegally stream them. I could just legally stream them for free. But you go with different, you go and see different people. A lot of it is race based, but it could be right wing, it could be just extreme people around the world, kind of in a Louis Theroux way. Are we a fan of Louis?
Oh, man, Louis is a dude, man. Like, I grew up watching Louis, like, religiously.
Yeah.
And that was the guy. And Nick Broomfield.
Yeah.
And a couple of others. Like, you know, like, I've always just been into that embedding type of documentary. And it's weird because I'm a comic.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a fucking filmmaker. I'm not a guy who, like, puts myself on that pedestal as journalist.
Yeah.
And even, like, the show, man. Like, I'll be honest with you. It's weird that this show, because... how can I put it? Like, it's people say, you know, oh, it's, you know, and some of the messages I get is like really like, you know, looking at it like, oh my God, it's this and it's that. And it's like, really, it's just a dude asking some questions.
Yeah.
Like, I try not to put it on this weird pedestal of like, you know, anything grandiose.
It's what kind of works amazingly is your kind of, your openness to all of it. There's a lot where the thing that I like with Louis, again, and I adore Louis, I've watched everything he's ever done, but a lot of his stuff, you watch and you go, look at these mental bastards.
Yeah.
There's a fair few of yours that you watch and you're like, I don't agree with anything that guy says, but I understand why he believes. Do you know what I mean? I can understand he's articulate and he's good.
And there
are some mental bastards
as
well.
Yeah, of course.
There are a load. And the thing that works, I think, is you seem to genuinely become friends with them in that time.
Yeah.
And it's a closeness. But I'm running in circles here. One of the reasons I think it works well is the lack of information about who you are, let's be specific,
what race, my religion, all that. Yeah.
There's people not sure if you're black, if you're Asian, if you're Muslim,
Jewish,
all sorts of stuff. And that kind of, that vagueness works really well.
Yeah. Like,
with Louis, it's a white man.
Yeah.
That's, it's as simple as that. The thing that I think works and gets you under an extra layer is because of the way the right are at the moment, and it's not only the right
it's the left as well,
but the way a lot of people are at the moment is they want to prove to everyone, I'm not racist, I'm anti-Islam, or I'm not racist, I'm anti this or anti that.
Yeah.
So I think them not being sure what you are, at points, they're kind of trying to impress you and trying to... When you, and be like, hey, look at us.
Yeah.
No, I think that works nicely.
I mean, definitely. There's always, especially with the ambiguity of what the fuck the word is, you know.
Yeah.
You guys out there know what I'm trying to say. You know that one. But with that, it kind of opens up this weird argument because I'm sort of take on the face of what they don't like.
Mm.
But then also it's good for me because I have no real attachment to it.
Yeah.
So if they say shit about Islam, I go, okay. You know what I'm saying? And it's that weird, and it kind of brings out their... because what I try and do is I just try to be there. And then what comes out is from them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying, though? And I ask questions and all that stuff, but I'm just there. So when they're telling me, you have Sharia courts, I'm like, what do you mean I have Sharia courts? And then it makes them explain more of what... Because then what you understand is that they have a polarized view of what this thing is. And it's a caricature.
Yeah,
because what that thing is in itself is multi-layered, multifaceted, multi-racial, multi-everything.
Mm.
But in their head, they have beard dude, brown skin, probably wears one of those I've got Muslim dressings.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And wears a head wrap. And that's what they have in their head. So I sort of take on that image for them because I'm the closest thing to that. Yeah. And then they attach to that. And then I go, well, explain what you mean by that.
And they're filling in the blanks for themselves.
It's not me saying it. Because I think that's really important. It's weird when you make a show like that. Because I don't think I can't say it under contract, but it puts you in a weird world, man.
Yeah.
It's a fucking weird world. I don't know if I can swear on this, problem. It puts you in a weird world, bro.
Yeah.
Like, it's a world that you don't realise exists. And it's a world that kind of exists on the internet.
Yeah.
And you kind of, and off the film, you kind of realise how people get into the position. And it's all about left and right wing right now.
Yeah.
Because I think both sides are too polarised.
Yeah.
And I think what the polarisation does is it moves normal political ideas. And so, like, I am, you know, say if I say I'm a liberal, I'm not liberal enough for the polarised. So say, oh, no, you're right or centre. I go, no, your ideas don't move my ideas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and that's what's the weird thing is they're trying to move my ideas, or I could be a conservative, and they go, well, you don't believe in this, well, then you're a centre. And you go, no, I'm a conservative. Your idea, so what's the point I was trying to get to?
I completely see. It's something that's really prevalent with feminism as well.
Yes.
People say, oh, feminists believe this. It's like, well, none of the feminists I know believe
that. And it's five
different
types of feminism. You can't
just put this blanket thing of, oh, you're a feminist. Oh, so you think that men shouldn't have rights?
It's like,
no.
Yeah.
And it's the same with left. I'm left. Oh, so you think we should just... Or so you think there's, for example, there's nothing wrong with female
genital mutilation. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, no, I don't think that. I think that's wrong. I think there's things wrong in all sorts of religions.
Majority of people don't hold themselves to one ideology.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Majority of people have a spread out. Like, if we, you know, if we talk about certain subjects, we're going to disagree on things and we're going to agree on things.
Yeah.
But we could probably all come under the same camp, but we agree and disagree, and that's life.
Yeah,
and that's how people are. But I think it's this weird thing now where everybody sort of cloaked themselves in this banner. I am a this, I am a that, I am a this.
Yeah.
And it's weird, man, like, because even like the criticism I get from doing the show, I get called SWJ and all these type of things. And I go, man, I ain't that fucking liberal. Like, I'm a comedian, number one. I say dank shit
on a
regular basis.
Yeah, and on the show.
On the show.
I like that.
Some of the bits are dank, man.
Offensive and quite...
Some of them bits ain't fucking PC. Like, I don't, some of them bits ain't like me being Mr., you know, like, guys. Like, I'm not that guy, you know?
I can confirm that because I watched the bulk of the second series that's out so far at home. But because I didn't have the right Skybox subscription to watch the first series, I watched that round my mum's.
Okay, okay.
So I can confirm that some of it is a bit uncomfortable to watch with your mum. You know what I mean? That kind of proves that there is things that said that you are like...
But that's
the point of it.
That's the point of it. And it's that weird thing of, like, you know, because I wanted to, especially because if I was going to put stand-up in it, I wanted to play with the idea of taste.
Yeah.
And be like, what is tasteful now?
Yeah.
Because this guy is saying this thing, but then I'm saying a thing that's bad, but I'm joking. So is that okay now? Yeah, and it's for you to decide. Yeah. And because there's one of the episodes where I went Berkeley and I was with Milo Neopolis and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And in the end of the episode, because there's always just, you know, sort of, how can I put this with being, without destroying my career, is you know, there, it's not just, there's a lot of idea, there's a lot of cooks.
Yeah.
In making a dinner of TV.
100%.
And, you know, everyone's got their idea and you kind of just have to... And in that episode, I was just like, I'm not going to give my opinion because everyone's giving their fucking opinion on this episode. Make your own mind up. These are the two sides.
That's what I like about it. Years ago, I had a couple of documentary ideas in development with the BBC. And the reason I walked away was because they wanted to put elements in that guaranteed that we had a final result.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And that's what I like. In series two in particular, there's two or three episodes where it comes to the end and you're like, I don't really know.
Yeah.
I don't really know what I think about this. And that's good. That's
like the
fine. I like that. There's
like
not that pressure to go, we put you in this situation, we have some things set up to make it all flare up and then you have a scathing view at the end. There's points where you're going, look, I get it. And again, that's... I think it's someone in that episode mentions, or in your roundup, I think at the end, it's kind of they all are. That whole episode is about at freedom of speech, essentially. And Milo and his alt-right people coming and doing a speech at Berkeley University, and the left-wing groups opposing it, and protesting, and the fear of stuff flaring up and all this. And again, the whole point there is people have kind of blurred this whole idea of freedom of speech into freedom
to say something
or speech without consequence, which isn't the case. You can have freedom of speech, and I then have a right to say, you're an idiot.
Yeah, it's cause and effect.
Yeah, it's and that's what both the left and the right in that episode didn't get.
Yeah, because there's that...
They were both as bad as each other, going, no, you can't say that. I've got a right to be here and to say that I don't agree with you. And it's like, well, I've got a right to be here. And as you were saying, it was largely an episode of people standing in front of each other arguing, and it's like, well, you've got the freedom of speech that you wanted then.
Because
that's happening. You're having that discussion.
Well, it's that line, isn't it? It's that one line that it's like, I think I tried to sum it up in the middle, is I try and say, one side saying, you can't say that, he just has.
Yeah.
And the other side is saying, I want to say that, you just did.
Yeah.
So where's the clash here?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's the same, it's the same. It's the same, like, 100 people every day.
Yeah.
Majority of the schools want to get on with their stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like, you know, and people like, when the clip went out, because I mean, if we're being realistic about what television is, and advertisement and marketing, it's clips, because the clip, more people watch the clips than watch the actual show.
100%.
And the clips are sensationalized, very taken out of context bits.
And
I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah.
But I don't control that. And that's
same. It's the reason I started doing podcasts.
Fuck, exactly amazing.
For that. But I can also see that there's been a few clips of Guzzi's show, Man Like Mowgli, that I'm like, well, that's going to go viral.
That's
perfect. It makes sense.
Yeah,
it's
not,
it's not how you created it, but once you've created your thing, I believe if you can create your art purely and make it available, then within reason, however the marketers want to go about sending people there, that's down to them. I kind of had that in music. Was like, look, it's your job to figure out how we promote it.
Yeah.
I've made the art. Now
I think if I wasn't making a show where it looks like I have opinions about things I don't have, you know what I'm saying? And when it's very much about,
I wouldn't care
as much, maybe. I think I'd be a bit more, if it was just like a comedy show, I'd be like, you put out the clip of when I said that.
But they find the clip that makes it seem as if you're incredibly vehement about one side. You're like, no.
Yeah. But anyway, that's, you know, that's the way of the world. But so there was that one bit with Milo, and people were like getting on my case, or people were like saying, oh, this is about to go down. And I was like, no, there wasn't an argument.
Yeah.
Me and him had a pretty decent conversation.
He was polite. I mean, again, I need to make it clear. I think Milo is a piece of shit. I think he's an idiot. I've never met him, but the stuff I've seen him say, I think he's not my dude.
Yeah,
he's not my kind
of
guy. That was it. He was articulate. He was polite. He was calm.
And we didn't argue, because my point wasn't to argue with him about his views. His views were irrelevant.
Yeah.
It was, does he have a right to say it?
Yeah.
So, so all this like thing of like, you know, me gonna go, but this is, I said, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What his views are don't really matter, because number one, you ain't gonna hear them anyway, because it's gonna be drowned out by left and right. And number two, it's the point of, is he allowed to say it?
Yeah.
And that's what the point I was trying to get to.
And that was never more prevalent than in that episode, that you'd try and ask a question and someone behind you would be shouting a question at them or arguing at them. It's like, I'll get to that.
Yeah.
And that was just really, and again, it was the evidence of the left and the right just stopping intelligent and calm discourse being an option.
Because by the end of that episode, I was sick of hearing fascist and communist.
Yeah.
Like those two words, I could not, it just, but then like, you know, America itself is such a crazy place. I remember, so we did that. So we filmed the Berkeley episode.
Yeah.
And we got this photographer dude who was taking photos that day from San Francisco. Really cool guy called Travis. And then he goes, hey, man, you know, there's a thing called Folsom Street Fair that's in San Francisco. So we're like, yeah, all right, we'll go. And it was an open-air fetish festival.
Yeah.
And it was in literally an hour away from each other.
Yeah.
And it was just two polar opposite worlds.
Yeah.
And it was too much mentally.
Yeah.
I couldn't handle the change in an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Because like you're sort of in this world where there's so much shouting and venom, and then you got this one world where people are fucking whipping each other, and you go, this is a mental... this is mental, bro.
Or a kind of a theme I noticed throughout the series is... and because when you were in Israel...
Yeah.
With Lahava, you went to the Gay Pride Festival with some people who are often thought of as terrorists. When you were in, was it in New Orleans that you
New Orleans,
were,
yeah, yeah.
You went with, to that amazing party. Oh, but again, yeah, you seem to go to good parties with the wrong people.
Yes.
Is what I kind of kept.
And that one I got, I was so hungover that whole show.
Yeah.
I was like, like just getting wrecked every night.
Because it was the Southern Decadence.
Yeah. So I wasn't going out. I was going out every night and night. That one, I had no professionalism. Because yeah. I mean, it was the show. The show's like, I mean, to make these shows, man, is so draining.
Yeah. The thing I like about it is it feels like not, again, it seems weird that I keep referring to the amateurishness of it. But as we were talking about, the fact that you're not a journalist really helps. It's what I think makes this podcast work. It's the fact I'm not a journalist. It means that they're real conversations.
It's honest.
They're natural conversations rather than it feeling really planned out.
And sometimes
that's what I feel on the show. It feels like if something's happening up the road, regardless of what's on your day's schedule, you'll be like, well, should we go and film that?
Yeah.
Let's go and do that. Let's go and talk with that.
Sometimes the people we're interviewing are more professional than I am. Which is always interesting because they're more media trained than I am.
Right.
I'm not like, you know, I never.
Or the Reverend dude that was. I watched that yesterday.
Pastor Burns? Last
night. Pastor Burns.
The black dude.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I actually like that guy.
He seemed so engaging. He's such a nice, charming guy.
You know, but then you look at Reverend Al Sharpton. Who is a media trained dude.
Mm-hmm.
And interviewing that guy was so interesting because.
I was excited about that because I've heard so much hate about him from the black community, from rappers, from all sorts, saying how he exploits every situation.
They call him a race
pimp. Exploitation. Yeah, the race pimp, exactly. Yet, I've read and heard loads about Al Sharpton. I saw his face just as you were heading over to him. I was like, oh, this will be something. I was like, what a lovely man.
Yeah, but he's like, he's a king. And like, he's a good guy, and it's not me chitting on him. But the dude has this, he's been doing this for so long that, like, I'll ask a question, and he'll know what I want to get.
Yeah.
But he'll give me something, and there's sort of this weird exchange he will do, where he'll go, I won't give you that, but I'll give you this.
Yeah.
And he's just constantly, and it's like interviewing him, and the reason I wanted to interview him is because I kind of, because that episode, you know, it was meant to be about this black guy who votes for Trump, which I didn't find interesting.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, I mean, you vote for the fuck you want to vote for. I think we've come far enough in this world where whatever race you are, you can vote for you want to vote.
Yeah.
But there's this weird thing about new fame.
Right, yeah.
And then I went
out of nowhere, superstar.
Superstar. And infamy as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And I wanted to sort of do it, and I wanted Al Sharpton, because Al Sharpton sort of had that same. They're sort of the same. They're on the same coin in some ways.
Yeah.
It's both politics and race.
Yeah.
And so it's that interesting thing of trying to, you know, see the old school dude.
Yeah.
Who did the same for years.
In the communities and in the.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah. And that was, as I said, I thought that was absolutely fascinating. I'm purposely not giving any episode numbers because I think.
No.
They're all easy to just go and watch.
Yeah, there's
loads of them. But what I really like about it, and Al Sharpton and Pastor Burns are prime examples of that, but the guy who was the pro-life guy, the anti-abortion guy, one of the things I love about the series is it's showing that a lot of these people are really charming, intelligent, nice people. And in the media, we like to paint them as evil demons, as monsters, or the right are all Nazis, or this or that. They wouldn't be able to get the followings they get if they were these monsters. Mm. And I think that's what was key with that guy, because, again, I didn't agree with anything he was saying, but I found him to be a charming guy. And again, he was one that it felt like he's presenting exactly what he wants to present here. He's really doing this, but it was absolutely faultless.
Yeah.
Every response, every time you asked a tough question, he had a really good answer
Really, rope a dope, man. His
argument on when he was saying about in slavery, how they wouldn't, slavery was about people not acknowledging that black people were humans, and he was saying that that's how they look at babies and fetuses, that people aren't acknowledging that at a certain point that they're human, we're looking at, and things like that. It was like, oh shit, That's powerfully put, because it's using a lot of sensitive subjects and areas to make you not comfortable arguing against it.
And that's why you have to. That's why my position. I have to not react.
Yeah,
because a lot of people go, how do you stay so calm? Because I go, like, if I react,
yeah,
that's the thing. That's the trigger.
Yeah.
Because then I've given an emotional response and I'm not thinking logically anymore.
And that's never more prevalent than with the guys in New Orleans, is their thing is...
emotion.
Getting reaction. They go out to gay pride marches, essentially, and shout that they're abominations and they're sinners.
And faggots. And going really
in there, yet they're calm as anything. They all look as if they're ready to fight, yet they love the fact that they're not having to fight. And one part in that episode, I'm looking at my phone now because I made note of it. Because the main guy,
Reuben Israel,
he looks like a tough dude and a scary dude, but he's very much, again, his logic was barely there. Yeah. On most of his arguments, it was just, well, this is what we've
got. He's got old biker chubby muscle.
Yeah.
Genuinely. He's got old biker chubby muscle.
And he loves standing there as everyone's getting angry, and there was this one scene, and the guy's face was blurred out, where this guy was really getting in his face, and he was bigger than him, and he was saying that, I'm a heterosexual male, but I think that you guys are disgusting, and everything you're against. And he says, have you ever fucked your old lady in the ass? And he goes, no, that's disgusting. Yeah. And then he just goes, I fucked your old lady in the ass. And it was so childish and stupid, but I was like, yes, mate, because he's got right in his face.
Yeah, I remember that bit. And he goes, no, because the Bible says not to. And he leaves and he goes, well, I fucked your old lady in the ass. And it was funny as hell.
And it was exactly that, because it was, you'd seen that people making rational argument against them, that wasn't what they were there to do. No. They wanted a reaction, even on that episode at the end, where you tend to confront them in some way. And I use confront loosely as well, because I think most of the times it is, you sit it down and talk to them and say, at points you highlight, you know, I've not just been patting you on the back and agreeing, because again, often in these situations they'll kind of turn their own blind eye to when you're not agreeing, like they'll say something and you'll say, I don't really agree with that, and they'll change the subject and go on. So the end bit feels to me like it's going, look, just to be clear, when this comes out, you do know I don't agree with you.
You're
right. I don't want to walk away with you thinking I agree with everything, and then you watch the show and you're like, what?
Yeah.
I thought he hated gays too. No.
Yeah, it's a weird thing that, like, people... Because, I mean, on the whole, people aren't that upset about it. Mm. Like, that guy who... Jeff Durbin, the guy, the anti-abortion guy, he was upset with it.
Right.
But he was more upset with the channel than he was me.
Right.
He was pretty all right with me. He was like, you know, because I mean, the only thing that I could have done was what I said to him. So he was cool with me. But he made this video about, because he said we made him look like a cult leader. So he made a video of cutting up all my episodes, making me look like a cult leader. And it was pretty funny.
Because again, it's one of the bits I laughed at out loud at when he made this big point of, no, they're following the church, not me, and all this. Yeah. And then it played the opening credits to his TV show, which is him looking like an absolute
rock star.
And again, tight beard, tight haircut. I can't fault him.
We're
rocking the same look right here, so I can't get too far.
Yeah, you could be like the new Christian pastor of, like, you know, you had problems, but then you found your way.
Easy. But
the question you was asking me before we even got into all of that was where my upbringing.
Yeah.
Do you want to get into that?
Yeah. Sorry, if you want to,
it's what you
want
to know about it. It's always that weird thing of when people ask me, because the other thing, I'm not used to talking about myself in such a weird form of life. So tell me about this and that, and then I realise stories that I didn't remember I knew.
But
I mean, I grew up in East London, a bit of a bum.
Yeah.
My whole life. Never really done much. Started doing comedy when I was about... Done my first show at 16.
Oh, wow.
Bombed out. Didn't do it again until I was like 18. Started taking it seriously when I was like 20. Drop out of uni twice.
Yeah.
Dropped like the last time to do comedy.
Oh, what were you doing at uni?
I'd done film and broadcast the first time. Got kicked out of London Met. University in England. and then I went Manchester and I was doing performance practice. And the reason I went Manchester because I weren't working in London doing comedy. I wasn't getting no work.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I went to Manchester, I started getting work in London. So I was coming back every week and breaking even.
Right.
Like, not even making money.
Yeah.
Just exhausted, hating uni. And a couple things happened that made me just say, you know, I'm packing this in. One of the ones was, there was this weird thing where, like, stand-up was one of the modules in for the third year.
Yeah.
So Jason Manford came in and would watch the third years. And then he said, oh, is there anyone else in the first years who want to do stand-up? So I went up and done a set. And he just looked at me and said, like, yeah, quit union, go do comedy. Like, this ain't for
oh,
you.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow.
He said, yeah, just quit, man. He goes, you're doing comedy, man. Stop this foolishness.
That's dope.
And then I had got this tattoo done, and it got infected. So I had to drop out. So I couldn't go back to uni. And then I won this, I got into this competition, the best student competition.
Yeah.
And Chortle, right? Yeah. And I got ill. And I came out of hospital and done my heat the day I came out of hospital with the cellulitis. I got a blood infection, went blind and everything. Yeah. Came out of hospital that day. And I sort of got through. And I got to the finals and I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to work at comedy for this, like, 4 months. Just every day, comedy, comedy, comedy. And if I get something out of this competition, not even win, but if I get something, if I get an agent or something, I'll stay with it. If I don't, I'll just quit.
Yeah.
And I won it. And then I quit uni the next day. And then I went full time.
It's amazing.
Yeah, so I went full time from there. But
that's dope to have jumped into it in that way. Yeah. It's funny because Chortle's one that people often kind of say, "Oh, no one actually gives a fuck about Chortle other than comedians."
Yeah.
But it's like, well, who do you think puts you over and puts you on? That's that's valid still.
I mean, it's valid.
If you're getting attention in Chortle, then you'll get other comedians into you, respecting you, and pushing you.
I mean, to get a good review from him or get something from me, getting something like that's never a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to get you on Live with the Apollo the next day.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad thing, you know what I'm saying, fam? So
it's good as well, though, that that you had someone say to you, like, why are you doing this?
Yeah,
academically.
Not even that.
Yeah,
just quit.
And
there was just none
it.
Of that. Yeah. There was none of that. Like, oh, you know, soft hand. And this was in front of the whole class, the teacher. He looked me in my eyes and said, "He said, just quit, man." He goes, he said it so casually. He just said it like, "Ever quit this, man?" He goes, "What are you doing? We're playing games."
It's true. Because
a better decision I ever made in my life.
Anything
bro.
In the arts. And again, I think there's benefits from studying the arts in that you can have equipment and you can have access to certain things that you wouldn't have,
and the experience of finding yourself and you know, going. I think you go, because the thing is, I went, because this was when I was about 20 so all that, so from that 18 to 20 period,
yeah,
and like in terms of partying and shit, I've always looked 30.
I was drinking, I was smoking.
So it was like all this element of like, what was my first spliff? I never had that.
Yeah,
so going to uni wasn't this like, you know, mind-blowing experience where I finally put on my Bob Marley poster and you know what I'm saying? But I never had that. So for me, it was just like, you know, it was an escape. Like, I used uni as an escape.
I get that.
To leave London because I found it too hard and I found it too difficult and the circuit was, you know, rough. And then I went to Manchester and I couldn't get no work in no Manchester either.
But that's it. That's the bit that interests me with the arts, is the fact is, it's an area that it doesn't matter if you've got a bit of paper that says, oh, I'm qualified as funny.
Yeah,
like, but
doesn't matter.
How's your 5 minutes?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's junk. Yeah. I'm qualified. I've got a certificate. If the crowd aren't enjoying it, you can't.
No.
Whip out your qualification. No. And go. By the way, this
actually,
is funny.
Sir,
you're not enjoying this. But
could you pass it around, please?
I mean, Stuart Lee can get away with doing that, obviously. But again,
yeah, he could show his reviews. But
he
then,
could completely do that.
But his audience would lap that up, though. But and do you want to hear the funny thing? So right now, I'm a full-time professional comedian. You know, got an award, all this shit. And I had applied, because there's actually a full comedy course at Southampton Solar University.
Right.
And they turned me down.
Oh, really?
It's just weird how now I'm a full-time comedian.
Yeah.
And then they turned me down to do a comedy course. They were like, yeah, we don't think you've got the chops. And it's mad. And then now I'm a full-time comedian. So it's that weird thing, you know, of there is no... And I think you can't teach funny.
Yeah.
You know, because I have, you know, and I'm not shitting on, I think a lot of comedians shit on comedy courses. Look, if you feel like you want to go do a comedy course, then go do that. But if a young comic asks me, not that I'm someone to ask advice off, but if someone asks me and they go, hey, you know, I want to do comedy, I'll say that money you're going to put in a comedy course, put that aside, book, and use that for train fare.
Yeah.
Use that for living.
Completely.
And just go do comedy, because you're the only way you can get better at this, and you can't do it in your mirror.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, and that's...
And if you can get that, you'll get... as much from just experience on stage or watching other comedians at shows as you would from on a course. It's interesting. I had early on, when I wanted to start writing scripts, I asked a friend of mine who's a script writer and has done amazing. I was like, what book should I read about writing scripts again? She was like, just read some good scripts and do that. And with a casting director recently, I was like, look, I'm doing this acting thing now. I'm thinking of joining some acting classes. And he was like, you're getting gigs at the moment. Learn on set. Learn rather than have someone tell you how to do it. Be around people. Keep your natural instincts rather than another drama. And again, I'm not having to go at drama schools, but rather than being another drama school student, kind of learn.
Why are you doing acting?
I love it.
You just love it? Did you always love it?
Always been a film and TV nerd.
Yeah.
As much as music, if not more. And then, it kind of... When I started doing music, a lot of people, for early days, were like, oh, your music videos, you put a lot into them. It's like, that's because I love the
Your music videos are dope,
I was always into that. That's why I always kind of came up with the ideas for them and all that.
Even your album covers are lit.
Yeah,
I can't remember because my
going on in it.
Because when I first started growing my beard,
you
was the reference point. Everyone would call me. Oh, look, scrupulous beard.
Because you know, I've been that.
People had thought I was you when you was in Edinburgh.
Amazing.
People come up to me and go, "Are you scrupulous beard?" I'm like, "I'm not. I'm not scrupulous beard."
I love but, it. I need to tell people now if they want to take a guess at where we're recording this. They're going to be right because we're in Hoxton.
Yeah.
I was like, "Are you going to estimate where we would be recording?"
If someone walked past right now, people would be going, "What are they doing?" They go, "No, this is standard Shoreditch."
Standard real talk.
Well, we fit in, and I'm drinking a coffee. Like we're blending in, bro.
Recorded a podcast.
Yeah.
I love it.
So
East London.
But yeah, no, because I remember my uncle. Like I enjoy. I love your music too. I love Thou Shalt. I think is one of their it's such a good joint. It's probably the lyrics everyone recites to you, but when you're saying they're just a band. And it's even me of, you know, I don't say I'm an artist, but creating stuff. I take that as not taking my shit too serious.
Yeah,
because
completely.
It's just, and because you kind of got to put it, and that's what I like about comedy, is I put something out there, people see it, and I've got to throw it away.
Yeah.
And that was hard for me at the beginning, where it's like, I have these jokes and they work.
Yeah.
But people see them now, so I've got to throw them away,
you know? It's the balance of pride and humbleness. I came up, I mentioned this on another podcast recently, but I came up with I finally found my mantra in life. I had Ed Skrein on the podcast a while ago, and he was saying he found his mantra of just, why the fuck not? And I loved it. It was great because when he's going up for roles in Deadpool and all this. But I realised that mine is, I ain't shit. So it's kind of, do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm not shit, but equally, I ain't shit.
I thought you just said the same thing twice. I was about to put my hand on your shoulder and say, no, you're someone.
Are you okay?
You're someone, brother.
But that's it. It's having that belief of not thinking there's anything special about it, but equally going, no, but I'm doing what I want to do. And again, you're doing comedy, you're making documentaries, but still, it's like, I don't want to think it's art as such. It is what it is, I'm doing what I'm doing.
That's why I mean, some people, you know, and I know I'm not, I don't mean to hurt people's feelings, but when some people, like, you know, the doctor, I go, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Like, I just never... I mean, it's probably one of the reasons why I'm not more successful, because I'm very much just like, you know. But, you know, it's fine, you know. But, yeah, I just never really, you know... Because, I mean, when I first started comedy, this is some... shit I don't really talk about, but when I first started comedy, I remember when I first met my agent, he's a good dude, and he says to me, what do you want to do with your career?
Yeah.
And I said, I want to play Amsterdam. I want to do this club called the Tumla. And they laughed at me. And they're like, okay, all right, but what do you want to do? And I said, I want to play Tumla. And they'll go, and they got to a point where they're like, mate, you'll play fucking, stop saying Tumla and say some other stuff. And I was like, yeah, I'll do some other stuff, but I want to play Tumla.
Yeah.
And about 6 months I played Tumla. And then ever since then, I've just been, I've been riding it. And, you know, there's been ups and downs. It's weird because I've never really, it's not like I don't enjoy doing the other things, because I do enjoy it in some aspects. But, you know, like I know what I love.
It's good that you get to bring comedy into it as well.
Yeah.
That you have stand up in the show. And again, it's not going to be parts of your routines or set.
But
one of the things that I think comedians get more comfortable when they realise, I was speaking to Chris Ramsey about this, that he did his first Fringe show and he got a loads of love and was nominated, and then he was scared because he was like, well, that's my whole life has built up to doing that. That's all the experiences. The realisation is that it's not about the things that happen, it's the way that you can look at them, the way you see them through your eyes. And that's what works on the show, is the stand-up bits in a way of segues, in a way of jokes, in a way of a break in the mood and things like that. But it all it holds it together. It shows that this is a comedian doing this. It's not Gus Khan. You got me. It's not Jumanji Maddox.
It's definitely not Gus Khan.
It's not the documentary. And it's like, what I want to do is
if I make another season, I want to slip Gus Khan in it and just edit it and not mention it and just see if people notice.
Legit, I'm going to talk about it afterwards, but I've had an idea for a series that me, you and Gus can do. It's amazing. Great. It's beautiful, but you know, great. I love the confusion of just three dudes of different ethnicities with big beards.
We're all different ethnicities.
That are all into rap.
Basically. Yeah, because I just love that. Like, it's just, and then when we connect, then what do we become? We have a bunch of hipsters, or we're going mosque. Like, there's anything in between
Exactly.
Is it anything?
And,
you know,
and that confusion as well that all of us will at some point have been called a Muslim.
Yeah,
have been called a Jew.
Yeah,
have been called all these different things. We look completely different. Different ethnicities. Yet we've all simple thing. So, I'm going to keep banging on about the series, I'm afraid. But one of the things you touched upon was the guy who he wasn't happy about it. Are there any people that you've kept in touch with? Because, again, I made a note of one dude, on the Ruben Israel one.
Oh, VJ.
VJ was just hilarious. He was just great.
Do you know weird? Ruben Israel and all them loved the episode.
Yeah.
Like, they don't... I mean, there's some... I mean, because they're all different people.
Because they're the ones, they're the ones of all that... They want people to be outraged at them.
Yeah.
So all the others, it's kind of, I can see that some would be, oh, shit.
Yeah. But some of them, but then it's like, it's weird what some people get upset with. Because some people get upset and I'm like, dude, it's what you said.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
You know, because people got this weird thing about this weird mentality of what edit can do.
Yeah.
And the edit can't, I mean, the edit can be a bit fucked, but it can't change the words that came out of your mouth.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You said that statement and that's, you know, and you stand by it. But I try not to talk to anyone.
To keep in touch with anyone.
Nah, man. Nah, I've had a few people reach out to me and there's a few people I wouldn't mind talking to. Like, there's the kids from the Brat Camp, I'd like to see how they're getting on.
Yeah. Oh, that was one that...
That's the best episode.
Series 2 was my favourite episode because it was one that... So.
No comedy.
Storm is essentially it's a prison camp.
It's a real prison.
Yeah.
And they clear it out, and what they do is they get these kids who have been bad, and it's $70 or $30, and you put the kid in a prison for weekend. Yeah. And it's like Scared Straight, and that show Scared Straight, and they beat them up and shit, and take them to prison cells, and you know, prisoners shout at them,
and they're literally throwing these poor kids about, but. The more the episode went on, the more you saw, the more you spoke to them. I was like, "All right, this is kind of cool." It's my favourite of your confrontations as well, because again, I like that you're not going in there and going, "Well, here's our end confrontation to get an argument and all that." But when, again, spoiler alert, but one of the boys' mums is late to pick him up, and he's sad, man, because he's gone. He's done 72 hours, and it is the parents go and have a lesson as well. And that's the bit that started to win me over. As soon as they had that bit, I was like, oh, so this isn't just beating up kids.
And that guy who does the class is one of the most naturally funny dudes.
Yeah.
Because there's one bit where he goes, why are you trying to be like the other families? Why are you trying to be like the Johnsons? They having steak, we having fried bologna. Old Southern black dude jokes that you can't talk. And it's just like, he said some other funny stuff. But
it's one of the sad and emotional bits because the mum turns up and this kid has gone through it. And again, he's supposedly a naughty kid, but as she turns up late and you're saying to her, so what has to change now? And she's saying, well, he's got to behave and all this. And you're like, again, a really subtly but confrontation. He's still saying, so it's only him that has to change, right? Yeah. And she never gives an inch.
Yeah.
And she never says, I need to think
and
about
that. And she never will.
I'm hours and hours late for this big deal.
Well, I shouldn't say she never will, but it's just that. Yeah, that episode's hard, man. Like, that was hard. Because, I mean, I saw what they went through.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I was a shit kid. Yeah. Or what's regarded as a shit kid.
Yeah.
So I got it.
Yeah.
And they're not shit kids, man. I don't think they're broken. I don't think that they're done. I don't believe it. Yeah. And it's when I saw that and I was just like, you know. I think my initial thing was, this program, how can this exist? But then what I kind of got was, how can this exist? Like,
yeah.
what has happened to make this a possibility now? Why is this kid like this?
Yeah.
Like, what's happened to this? What's happened to this kid?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's that weird thing of, it's like, you know, and it looked, and it really, and it had desperation in it. You know, because these prison guards were desperate. Because, you know, and I, when the prison guard said to me, look, I don't want these kids in prison, I don't not believe them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, that was it. The first time you meet the prison guards,
you think, oh, like, they're enjoying this. They're a bit arseholes.
Fuck off, mate. Beating up on a kid, trying to look tough, feeling like, mate. And even there was one kid who was about 15, I think, but he was put together. He was the starting of an athlete. I was like... If this kicks off, I'm putting some money on it, you know, because some of these prison guards ain't looking that looking in that good shape. But again, it was when you then talk to them a bit later on, and they're like, "Look, when we physically exhaust them, their guard goes down a bit, and they open up more. And when we ask them about stuff at home, when we ask them, and there was so much good logic in there that at first it looked like this is just some stupid American scare them straight. It's like, no, there was a lot more.
And it kind of gave me a different view on cops, because even like the guy, the sheriff who ran it, Big A, and one of the guards, like, both of their kids were in prison.
Yeah.
Like, Big A, the guy, the sheriff who runs the program, who's like the sheriff of the town, his son's doing like 30 years in prison for cocaine trafficking.
Yeah.
And you go, man, like, there's, and he was crying. And this is like a big guy. He's like 6'4". Built like a shit brick ass.
Yeah.
You know, he's got war stories, man.
He's one of them dudes
I've killed three people and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was telling me this one story about where he had this, he had a shootout with this guy, and the guy shot the pin off his grenade. So that, and we'll, and me and the, and me and all these grown other men are just standing there going, like, what happened next?
And then what?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he said, like, and he was telling this one about he had this shootout with this guy for 4 hours, and then his dad pops out the window and starts shooting at him, and we're just there like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Yeah.
But anyway, and he's there bawling his eyes out, saying how his son's in prison for the next 30 years. And you kind of go, man, like, you know, there's some other motive of why he's doing this.
Yeah,
and you kind of, and it's one of those episodes, I just don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't know, and I kind of, you know, I would like to see how they're doing.
Yeah.
But all the evidence, I mean, I've kind of, and it's weird because I think now I'm really trying to detach from that world.
Yeah.
Because like I said, that world's weird, man. That world, and it's like, the world infiltrates your Facebook, infiltrates your Instagram, infiltrates your Twitter. Like, I go on YouTube and I type in Marvel films.
Yeah.
And then I put up a, you know, kind of a big comic book head. So I'll click on a video, you know, about, you know, the 10 times Galactus got punched in the face or some crap And under that video, all my suggested videos are like, how Marvel's become SWJ, how Marvel's racist, because it's all targeted at me because of years of doing the months of research.
Yeah.
So then now it's that decompression, and it doesn't help when the show's going out and, you know, and then you're getting, you know, and you're getting even, you are getting, you know, and I, you know, I put out the videos and the comments you get either, and negative and good are both weird.
Yeah.
You know, and
they're
both extremes and weird, and I don't like either.
Yeah.
So I try to really detach myself from that world now.
But again, I like a lot of that comes across in the show is the realism of that. It's not a preachy kind of, oh, look at how bad these people are. I enjoyed it. It came to mind because you mentioned a changing of view on police in some ways. The one that I didn't enjoy the most, which was because it was good, but was because it was the UK one. Because all the others, even the racists, they seemed, there was like the southern guy who was an adorable racist, who had a really horrible racist wife. But again, he was a lovely dude, and he was such a charming, nice character. He was just, when you talk to him about his mixed race children, he generally seemed to have a breakthrough at the end and all that. All of them seemed to have something there that was good, or at least some kind of logic. And you came to the UK one, and the dudes were just fucking idiots and didn't know what to do. But again, it made me think of that one, because at one point the police came to stop the young lad, Tommy, from putting up anti-Islam posters, and in your little bit in between, you were like, part of me was like, yeah, stop him. But part of me also was like, fuck the police. Because again, even though she was doing a good thing.
No, but it was a weird thing. And there was that weird thing of, like, I was saying, like, you know, because he made a good point. He was like, well, what's offensive?
Yeah.
And you kind of go, well, I find that offensive. And you go, yeah, no.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, are we, you know, is offense a crime? I don't, you know what I'm saying? So there was, and completely. And, that, and the end of that episode.
Well, that was the one time it flared up. Well, that's properly, a weird. That was what was interesting.
Yeah, it was weird because I mean that was one of the that one really tested me as a person. Was what happened was is so you know I've talked to him about this thing and it sort of flared up more than it should have.
Yeah.
And you got to understand this. I've just done 6 episodes. This is the last day of filming.
Right.
So I've heard it all before. I'm drained. I just can't do it anymore. And I'm in my own country.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing this shit. Yeah. I'm in my own fucking country. I'm hearing this. And it all keep. And then he tried to get aggressive. And then what happened was is I took off my jacket to go confront with him. Yeah. And my camera guy just put his hand on my chest. No, my sound guy put his hand on my chest and said, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah.
And it really. And I realized at that point, and I'm not out here, you know, cracking skulls, taking names, but I really at that point was gonna fight this person, and not because it was him,
yeah,
because of all the other stuff I heard,
yeah,
and it all built up that day, and I was like, and I have really had to check myself and realize and go, well, what am I gonna do here?
But that's a perfect example of the experiences of both of you. Mm. So you're someone who would have grown up again in ways having those things build up and up, having some kind of racism, things like that. He's someone who, as happened throughout the episode, has said racist stuff, and when you've called him out on it, he's laughed it off.
Yeah, ignored
so he's not really acknowledged that you don't agree with him. Yeah. And where it flared up was him saying, "Oh, you're not going to turn on me now, are you?" And you were like, "Well, you know I don't agree with you on all this, Tommy." And it's kinda sad. It was like, "You're turning on me now. You've been with me, been mates, and all this."
And I think he
called you out on this, like when he was saying that the first slaves were blacks taking whites as slaves, stupid stuff. And again, it's weird because it is funny to watch because he's going, it's in history, and you're like, "Bro, tell me where it is. When did this happen?" He's like, "I don't know the date."
I say, "Tommy, I love you, but this is fucking mental."
It's great and it's funny, but you realise that he's grown up around that. He's grown up where people, rather than confront him, have politely disagreed. And again, I grew up in Thurrock, which is a stronghold of UKIP.
Oh, you're Thurrock boy.
And again, it's that thing of, for years, I always had the, he's all right, really.
Yeah.
And then again, about 5 to 10 years ago, I stopped with that. And just, there's people that I used to have a laugh with, but I won't talk to now because they're racist. They're not all right, really. They're a racist. Mm. It's kind of, well, he's grown up in this. It's like, cool, I don't need him in my life then. Mm. And it was that kind of thing, though. It was that kind of thing where he suddenly had that slap him in the face, where he's, every time you've argued with him, he's not realised, or he's not taken in that you're disagreeing with him here. And
he's built a relationship in his head.
Yeah.
And the thing is, and if you listen to what he's saying, is you've betrayed me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I bet he's been fucking betrayed his whole life. Yeah. And then he feel like I've done it now. And, you know, and I felt, you know, because there is that weird thing of, you know, I do have moral dilemmas making the show. And I do question what I do. And I do, you know, and I think, is this the right thing? Are we doing the right thing here? Have we just gone and baited someone into
Has it been a learning curve in that respect? Because I do feel there were some episodes I watched and thought, oh, you've kept quiet in the moment, and again sometimes because it's dangerous as fuck, but you get quiet in the moment, and then in the post, but you're like, how crazy is this? And then more and more you're kind of in the moment making sure you're saying, so why do you believe that? I don't agree with that, but why do you know what I mean? At least acknowledging and putting
I think you
you don't want to feel as if you're buddying up with someone.
I don't want to do that, and you know, and plus this is like my first TV show where it's my show.
Yeah.
And you know, you learn, I think the first series, if we're being honest, it was, I was very naive.
Right.
About the industry and about what this thing is and how things, you know, and how this works.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to really, you know, and it was, the second season weren't easy to make either. I mean, it's a stressful show, man. Yeah. And it's just not, you know, it's not, you know, and I kind of missed comedy.
Yeah.
Like I missed funny.
And
it's that weird thing of like, you know, comedy's where my heart's at, man. Like, I just like being fun. And it's weird. It's put me in this weird world now where it's just, you know, this world. So I've kind of.
Because really I said, it was interesting.
I mean, bar from today, I don't even really talk about the show. But if people ask me about the show, I don't really talk about it.
Yeah.
It's that weird thing of, you know, obviously I respect what you do. So, I mean, I'll talk about it with you. But yeah, I don't. It's not a thing I've really delved into. And
it's kind of interesting to live like that a bit, though. I recently did James O'Brien's podcast, and I really enjoyed it because literally 4 or 5 years ago now, I stopped doing interviews that are about me because. Mm. I'll be honest, I won't name any names, but I saw 4 or 5 different interviews with bands, and they had nothing to say, but were saying it with passion for hours and going on and on and on. It was like, right, I've not got anything to say on that. So again, I understand that if you're kind of going to go, I'm going to wait until I can have a good discussion about it.
Yeah.
And not saying that this, you know, I'm the best.
No. You know what I mean? But that's the thing. If I don't...
Rather than just, let's talk about this one bit that flared up or this or that.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's very, you know, I just kind of don't like sensationalism that much. And it's weird because everyone says that's what my show is. And I try to not make a show like that. So I kind of, you know, there's
again, that's what I like. I don't think it is that. I think it's got that tone. And again, the friendliness of it all, and not to pick too much up on nuances, but a phrase that you use a lot when saying goodbye, which I think really sums up the relationships with these people that you might not agree with, is I appreciate you.
And
you say that a few times, and it summed it up perfectly for me. It's like you're not agreeing with them, you're not, but in those moments. You are spending a day or two with someone.
They give me time.
And you're getting into, you're getting some kind of relationship
they give me
with
time.
Them, and it's having that.
But yeah, but definitely with the second season, I kind of wanted to do more everyday things. I think, you know, Nazism is so, and it's like, it's sort of so polarizing, but then it's very small.
And again,
it's not everyone's a Nazi, you know.
To highlight as well is you go and talk to, because of the commonly held belief, an understandable belief that, black people can't be racist. Mm. You do an episode going and finding some black racists, and they're proper racists.
Yeah, man,
one of the ones
they messaged me. Remember, you said they would contact me.
Yeah.
He messaged me.
Yeah,
because they messaged my fan page because they thought when I was doing the Apollo, when I was doing Live at the Apollo, they thought I was doing the Apollo in Harlem. And they're like, we're coming down. Because they're like...
They dress amazingly.
They have the most sense of humor. Because their thing is, they know what they're doing is mad.
Yeah.
And they have a sense of humor. Because when I say to them, like, yo, that door knocker you're wearing is crazy. And you're wearing a lion and shit and leather pants. Yeah, you're crazy. They go, yeah, it's a bit fun, isn't it? But they, like, they had the most sense of humor, like, out of all of them. Like, there'll be bits where I take the piss out of them and they'll give it back. And there was no... same with Ruben Israel, really.
Yeah,
Ruben Israel, for all intents and purposes, if I criticised him jokingly, he never took it personally.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't take it personally. Same with the Black Israelites. They didn't take it personally.
Yeah.
They knew I don't agree with them, you know. Because my dad's
Which
Jamaican.
Which is weird, because they're the two that were the most shouty and confrontational in public.
Yeah,
the rest were quite polite. They're the two that were the most... feeling as if they're going to beat people up for their belief, that then they're the ones that you kind of...
Yeah, but they were like, the Black Israelites said some of the funniest things.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's... because it was, I think, with Ruben Israel and the Black Israelites, they're so ridiculous ideas that they're funny. They're not everyday ideas.
I mean,
the fact that they think every white man is going into... It is...
Well, that was the thing that was great, was that episode ended, and it's one of the ones I watched with my mum, and my mum was like... So, they hate all white people. I'm like, yeah. She's like, but do they hate black people as well? I'm like, yeah, they hate quite a few black people as well.
They hate Africans.
They're pretty open on their hate.
Hate everyone.
And they don't believe that they're African or
descendants.
They think they're Israelites. And all this is like, mate, they were amazing.
But they did. There was one bit with the radio.
And they dressed like the bad video.
Yeah.
The Michael Jackson bad video. They look the bollocks. It's like,
They're just like old 80s rappers when they first came out. Like, you know, the rappers.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but they would say, they keep on calling white women Becky. And they keep on saying, like, they called white people Becky. And they go, like, look, man, I know you like Becky. And it was just like, and some of the stuff they were saying, you're trying not to laugh because it's horrific. But in the comedian in me, is just like, because there's certain bits in the show where someone says something horrific. And I've got, you know, you have to be gallows humour about it.
Yeah.
Or it's just depressing. And I've got a whole crew with me you've got to kind of keep up. And some of the stuff people would say was just ridiculous and hilarious.
Yeah.
Like this one guy where he's like, I'm neo-Nazi in Ukraine. He's like, I'm a neo-Nazi and I don't want any other race here. And I go, can I go? He goes, you can stay, but everyone else.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's ridiculous.
I mean, the Ukraine one's a great one to, I mean, we'll start to wrap things up as we're at an hour. But that one was fascinating because... all of the situations you put yourself in, they feel, you know, they must feel quite dangerous, mm. but there's a safety in that those people have agreed for you to be there. Yeah. In the Ukraine one was when you went to a festival. And you had a guy drunk, really close to your face, talking about how
he's a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Yeah, no, that
and
one...
And that was the one that felt dangerous.
Oh, that...
It felt scary, because it was like, right, everything else... And again, it made me think, oh, you can probably get caught up in, oh, I'm making a TV show. This isn't the real world. And then suddenly you're like, oh, there's this Nazi festival. Let's go to that. And then suddenly you're like,
We didn't know.
You'd been invited. Oh, yeah.
But then they invited us. And then they thought we were going to leave early. So they were like, oh, come to this festival. It's just a music festival. And then they thought we were going to leave, but we got there late. And they were like, you guys are going, right? We're like, nah, we're going to hang around for a bit. And we saw the first guy do the Nazi salute.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, quick, catch you on camera. And then, like, 5 minutes later, everyone was Sig Hailing. And that was the one where, like, you know, because I had the translator with me, and she was saying, like, you know, everyone's saying that if you step in this mosh pit, there's... And everyone had knives. We saw stabbings. Yeah, I saw a guy get stabbed in the head there. And that was the one where people were, like, openly threatening me.
Yeah.
Like, saying, like, you know, if you better leave before sundown, because we're gonna kill you, basically. Yeah. And I stayed, because I'm an idiot. it's weird, man. Like, because everyone goes, oh, you got big balls. I go, nah, I'm just dumb. Because it's sort of like a post-regret you get doing that type of stuff. Post-regret. It's like going bareback.
Yeah.
At the time, you're just like, this is going to be... And then after, you're just like, man, you know what I'm saying?
And it's a stubbornness in there as well. I felt that half the time when everyone was mistaking you for a Muslim and stuff like that. It's like, because I've had that in the past. I've had, in a local pub, I've had a guy telling me why people are like me shouldn't be in this area and shouldn't drink in a pub like this. And I'm sitting thinking, I've born under a mile from this pub I've lived in this same town my whole life. But...
Because you've got facial
hair. I was too stubborn to tell him I'm not a Muslim.
Yeah.
Because I was like, if I tell him I'm not a Muslim, it's like going, oh, no, I'm not one of them.
And one more right.
I'm going like, so why? And again, I'm thinking, I'm about to get the shit kicked out of me by a bunch of race, but too stubborn.
Yeah, man. You got, but sometimes you can't, you know, sometimes you've got there's only so much in life. You can go, okay, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, like, you know, I went and I looked the devil in the face, man. I said, bro, I'm here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I think that's, a lot of the time as well, and I'm not, and just saying, this ain't me being fucking Mr. Tough Guy, like, I've lost more fights than I've won.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Definitely. But at the same time, like, you know, it's like one of the reasons why I didn't get killed was because people thought I was mental.
Yeah.
Because they were like, this guy ain't going anywhere.
One of the first ones in Israel, when he's training his young kids to fight, to go and go and basically have fights at the gay, at the Pride Parade. Yeah. In that, they ask if you want to put on gloves and fight 4 or 5 guys. And I'm sitting there like, all right. And then you're like, yeah, all right. And I'm like, what's going on here? What's and again, you go in and you scrap.
Well, that whole situation.
But again, he had to kind of explain calmly that although you're not a Jew, you're not, because were they anti-Muslim? Or, again, I'm trying to remember what they were.
No, they were anything that wasn't Zionism. But but yeah, man, like, you know, all of that stuff, man, like, you know. You know, because you do look back and you think, is it worth it all?
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't know.
It's powerful, man.
I don't know.
Said, I've really enjoyed all of them. And again, it does have those moments of comedy in there as well, like with the American racists, the American Nazis, them attempting to burn a swastika.
I'm sitting across the road with binoculars.
Then the dude came over, what was his name, Ken,
who
was just a character from a film. He felt like he was an actor playing a character.
And it was the wind-up on that. That one was the one where, like, I really lost all sort of professionalism, and I was like, I'm just going to do the white. That's when I thought, I need to be a comic here.
Because again, he was like, you can come here, but don't come down there. And he was asking, like, so if I come down, what will happen? He's like, just please don't do that.
Well, the thing was, what I wanted to do was when he came over, he sort of came over with the sort of puffed up chest, like, you don't come over here. And I was like, let me see how far I can push this.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, how far can I go? And he was, and then he just breaks down and goes, please don't do that to us. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was funny. Mate. And then there was that, and then that bit as well is, and I proper, that was one where I was really dumb because I was winding this guy up after. It never made the show, but I was really winding this guy up to the point that he was turning red in the face.
Yeah.
And it's because I was funnier than him and I was quicker than him. You know what I'm saying? There's so many elements to why I could do it.
And
because,
again, they were such idiots. Yeah. The guy who's saying that, cats and Chinese people, and they go,
dolphins come from white people. White people are dolphins.
Again, it was just wolves
are Russian people. And
but I can't remember his name. But the main guy who was the most articulate and polite.
Oh, Dan Burnside.
Dan Burnside. That's it. He was the most polite and friendly. Yeah. But then by the end, it wasn't friendly at all.
Switched.
But
it was a night we left.
It had a clip of him saying, "If you come to our country," and this just it popped my mum. My mum was. Was cracking up. It was like, "You come to our country, you got to speak our language."
Zikow, you fucking idiot. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's that weird thing of like, we're proud Americans with Nazi flags. It's a mental idea.
It doesn't
you know?
Make sense. But the other two bits that proper made me laugh was the who were the Swedish.
Oh yeah, that was the first episode. Do you know what's weird about that episode is they were talking about alt-right before we even know what that was.
Yeah,
because they were like, because that was made right in the beginning. That was made when Trump was ridiculous. Running. It was like it was still a joke.
Yeah.
Oh, Trump's running, and he kept saying we're alt-right, and I was like, what? And me and my crew were just like, what the fuck is alt-right? We just didn't know what it was.
It just cracked me up is because they were saying that these are the new Hitler Youth and this kind of thing, and they're saying, you know, we do everything we can to stay within the law, but if we're pushed, sometimes it won't. And you ask him, it's like, well, you know, we have egged a refugee centre before.
Yeah.
I wanted to say tee hee. He was so naughty boy. Yeah. It's like, I'm ready for this scary. Yeah, what yeah, laws yeah, we? Yeah. Well, we've thrown eggs at a refugee centre. Yeah, it's like, you fucking rebels.
Yeah, and there was that one bit. It's this one bit at the end where it's like, I was like, I know it's your website. He goes, it's not my website. I said, I know it is. And that's kept him writing. But, and then there's one bit at the end where he just goes, yeah, but you don't want to be my friend anymore anyway.
it's so childish.
Yeah, you're like, but you don't want to be. He goes, when I come to England, I'm not going to ask you for a beer because you don't want to be my friend anymore. Like, you're going to look really sad about it. And I was like, mate, like, you're not a bad dude, but you're just mad views.
Mad views and proper childish.
Yeah.
With all
Frederick
of it.
Hagberg.
Yeah, I mean, he was hilarious. I will round things up, but again, I want to highlight as well, you go and speak in one episode to a guy called the Black Rebel, who is a black guy defending the Confederate flag. So it's not just all kind of, look at these crazy white people. It's a real variation.
I mean, people really do hit me up and they go, well, why don't you speak to this guy? And I'm going, well, give me his number. People have this weird idea of how you make a documentary.
Same with the podcast. Yeah. People are like, oh, why haven't you had this person on? It's like, I don't know that person.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, how do I hook that up?
And they're why don't you have Ajim Chowdhury on? I'm like, because he said no.
Yeah.
You know, it's that weird thing of like, you know, I can only film people who want to be filmed.
Mm.
And, you know, so it's really, and like, I'm willing to talk to extreme left. I'm willing to talk to extreme right. Like, well, I was when I was making the show. Yeah. Like I said, I'm kind of, I think I've come to the, I have nothing else to say about it as well. I think I need to do more comedy and more funny shit.
So the last two things I've noted. Number one, as I've said, I like the casualness of it all, the personalness of it all. But every now and then, there's a serious moment and you drop a proper highbrow question. Who wrote them? That's not, there's such a change in tone. It's always so like, all friendly. Then there'll be this point where you turn into a proper journalist and proper, it gets all serious. And it was with Al Sharpton and with the Reverend Guy Fieri. I was like, these bits aren't, this is different.
I swear down. I'm very honest about if, you know, there's a lot of stuff there that I didn't choose to be in there.
Yeah.
But those, I generally won't let no one write me questions.
I love it.
And I don't prep before I go to an interview. I sort of have an idea of what I want to get to, but I don't let no one write. Because I think if someone's writing your questions, because it happened once actually, and it's footage we never got to use anyway. It was in Ukraine, where people were trying to give me a script, and it just felt so forced. And I was just like, I'm not doing this.
I'm not a presenter.
If you want someone to do that, then go get that dude.
Yeah,
this is what I'm doing.
I
So all of that stuff was me. And I keep on saying, I make up words.
Yeah.
Like I say comfortability a lot. And it's not a real word, but I keep on saying it. I keep saying like, yeah, but you have this sort of level of comfortability, you know, and I keep on saying that
sneak
word.
Sneak it all in. Yeah, yeah, I love it.
And I keep on saying Wu-Tang as well.
I mean, that brings me on to the final question, because it's something you put to Al Sharpton, and I like that he was like, I can't answer that question.
I think he doesn't know. I think he doesn't know. Yeah, I think he doesn't know.
100% he doesn't know. And I think that completely, was it. But yeah, it's a slick move. But so who is your favourite Wu-Tang member?
ODB.
Of course it's ODB.
ODB for me. ODB, Cool Keith, Redman.
Yeah.
Is kind of influenced my comedy. Like that manic sort of just... I remember like there was a Redman video. And I can't remember what video. I think it was Dirty. And maybe one of those videos. I remember you used to get the CD and you put it in the CD drive and you'll play the music video. Yeah. And my mum's husband's mum was around. And I remember playing this video and it's like he's wearing like a big red man suit and there's women fighting and he's smoking a joint. I remember her just going, oh my God. And I remember that just was like, that's what I want to make. It's something that'll make your grandma not like it. And I just, and so, you know, ODB, Cool Keith. Like MF Doom, how he does sort of like saying smart shit dumb.
Yeah.
Like all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like really, I mean, and comedy also, you know, we've got Patrice O'Neill and all the,
yeah, yeah,
all
yeah,
the greats
yeah.
that influenced me as well. But I'll say ODB is my favourite.
Did you ever play the computer game?
Oh my God, what, Taste of Pain?
Yeah. It was amazing. Wasn't it? As if they come up with just a beat 'em up.
Yeah, and then you had to type in the password to get the blood.
Yeah.
And I used to play, and it was the only time I would pick U-God, right? Because U-God used to have like the fists. And then you used to do the finishing move, and they'd be like, "You can't beat me, son."
Yeah,
and then they'll be fighting in wallabies.
I love it. That was.
Who's your favorite Wu-Tang member?
I'd go ODB. I was lucky enough. I remember years ago, me and Dana Sachs supported RZA.
You're lying. What's he like
at the O2? Only met him briefly. He was cool as fuck, but it was amazing for us because at that point, we had a song called "Fixed," which is kind of calling out UK hip hop, and it was saying that Dizzy came out and changed the fucking game. You should credit Wiley and everyone else. But again, in this moment, it's Dizzy. And the whole point of the song was saying, but then everyone started doing exactly the same.
Yeah.
And Grime now, as you contest, has upped its game and changed completely and doing amazing things. But at that point, Dizzy came out and it felt like everyone else was just doing boy in the corner.
Yeah.
And I remember...
So everyone's doing sort of Migo rap now.
Yeah, exactly. I remember... Polar Bear was at that gig, who's a spoken word artist and rapper and all sorts of other stuff in Birmingham. He was saying he looked round the venue with just awkwardness at the amount of UK hip-hop art. Because again, if Riz is in town, all of UK hip-hop is going to be there.
Yeah, it's the Don.
But again, it was beautiful, us doing that song and looking round at them all, kind of screw-faced, but then also having to acknowledge, well, they pick you guys to support. Because we were doing something that no one else was doing.
Plus as well, bro, it's like you made that song, so you do it in front of the people you're talking about.
We supported.
And you stand by your words, and I respect that.
We supported Bizzle at his album launch.
Oh, no way.
And we were like, do we play Fixed or not? And I was like, it's all good playing it to fucking cool East London kids. Yeah. We've got to play it here. And we literally, you could have drawn a line down the room. Half the room were loving it and getting into it, and half the room were screw-faced, angry. And it's like, but again...
Are you still rapping?
No, I'm not.
You give up rapping?
I've stopped. If I get... It's one of them where... And I get asked this a lot online,
I know, I'm sorry.
No, it's good. I like to answer it every now and then when I can articulate it.
Because I'm also going to ask you now, I'll ask you off the mic, because I need to know.
it's one of them where I'm really pleased with my back catalogue, and I know that every gig I ever did, not that I smashed the fuck out of, but I put everything into it. And I stopped after our biggest gig and our biggest tour. So for me, I only want to come back if I've can write something that improves upon the back catalogue. And again, I'm proudest of my last album, of one of the middle
ones. Very accomplished.
It's kind of, that's it. We've done a loads. It's one of them. I know that I could make some money off touring and doing music, but I only want to do it if I can write new stuff that improves upon it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's that.
And what excites me at the moment is the podcast.
Well, you got to go with your heart and stuff,
doing all these other things.
I think you don't. you know, it's that weird thing of just turning out and turning up for the check.
100%.
And I mean, if that in you know more, I think it's better for your fans as well, man.
Yeah. 100%.
And I think it's, you know, at least you're giving them something that's a good product and honest and in your heart. You know?
People hit me up and say, I want new music. And I correct them. I go, no, you want good new music.
Yeah.
You don't want a shit new record that you then
who
go,
I preferred your first album.
I preferred your first album, man. It's like, cool, that's still
I
there.
Want new music. Well, yeah. I want a lot of things, man. Yeah. What do you want to do?
Yeah, I love it. But what's ahead for you then?
I'm going on tour.
You're touring everywhere as well.
Do you think, man.
Do you think your kind of international fan base is to do with the show as well? Because Vice is quite a worldwide thing.
I mean,
thing.
It plays a part. I mean, look, man, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, the reason why I sell more tickets or when I sold tickets on the last tour wasn't because of the show.
Yeah.
And it's given me a reason. It's given me audience in America, which I wouldn't have had before. Yeah.
It's that thing, though, that anything like that, all it does is give you a platform if you're shit.
Yeah.
That no one's going to give a fuck.
Of course, of course. Yeah, it doesn't really make a difference. But, and I've been in enough shit, but, and no one gave a fuck. But, I'm doing the mad places. Like, I mean, on the last tour, I mean, some of the places I'm doing aren't because of Vice. I'm just going up there to build fan base there.
Yeah.
The old school.
Because that's it. I looked at your lineup and I was like, mate.
Yeah.
There's so much. I normally look at comedians' lineups and there's loads, but it's loads Paul. In England. It's Paul. And you're kind of going all over Europe.
Yeah, because I'm not going to the small towns in England. Not because I ain't got love for them, but because it's just, you know, I won't sell enough tickets.
Yeah.
So it's like, I might as well fill those dates up with Copenhagen and places like that. So I'm going like Latvia, Lithuania, Finland, Estonia. I've been mad places. Austria, I think I'm going to Austria. I'm going to Australia. I've got the American dates are coming out soon. But so I've just booked my London venue, which is Hackney Empire, which is going to be there. Yeah, but it's
how
big.
That?
It's big. I think it's like 1-2.
It's big.
Yeah, it's big. It's very big. I know.
But how mad
big.
Is that for you? As a London kid,
it's weird, man. Because I played that on my first TV break. First TV break was John Bishop show,
right? Yeah.
Way before I was probably ready, and I got my first break on that show, in that venue. And I remember being young, and it's a soppy story, but I remember being young and being at that venue and being like, I want to play this place one time, man. And you know, to actually be doing it there is pretty dope.
Great.
Yeah, man, it's weird, you know, like, again, man, like, I was always just like I just wanted to play Amsterdam, so now everything that happens I kind of just accept it and kind of go with it. I don't have this sort of grandiose idea and plan. I think then that becomes a bit, there's things I want to do and achieve, don't get it twisted, but this sort of idea of, you know, I need this and this and this or I won't be fulfilled and complete is you know, I try to get my fulfillment from other places and I haven't achieved that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and it's a work in progress still.
Yeah.
But, you know, just the idea of, and it's this weird thing now of what I'm sort of deeming as success.
Yeah.
You know, and the game's always changing. I'm trying not to get caught up in what other people deem as success and try and let that influence my idea now.
Completely.
Because I think, you know, for a little while it was that. And,
it's one of the things I like, it's one of the things I've learned from acting is the fact is a lot of stuff, you'll do it and you can't talk about it yet.
Mm.
So you will have achieved all this really stuff that you're really proud of and you can't say to everyone, oh, look how good I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then by the time it comes out, you're on to the next thing and you're over it. So that kind of has made me a lot more in that world of just appreciate it in the moment. Yeah. Don't worry about what other people deem it as and what this seems. It's like, no, you've done that and that meant everything to you at the time and that's all that counts.
Yeah, I'm definitely...
The fact that you can't talk about it allowed me to appreciate the fact that I don't need to talk about everything I fucking do.
No, I get that. That's a good way of looking at it, man. Like, I kind of just now, like, I'm kind of in that spot where I'm like, you know what? Like, I, you know, just do things you want to do. And it sounds easy. But when you're a showbiz, man, it ain't like that. You know what I'm saying? You kind of, you compromise sometimes. I mean, and you do this, and you know.
A full circle a bit here, but it's one of the things that me and Gaz connected on hugely when we met. Because he was like, I didn't go and do Edinburgh. I didn't go down to London. I did my thing in Birmingham, in my ends, and he did it his way.
Yeah.
And again, I think, as you say, there's always going to be points along the road where you're like, well, maybe I should try this or maybe I should try that. But I think we are living more and more in a world where you can kind of do things your way a little bit. Yeah. You don't have to take all these things.
No, and I think it's good. I think that's what, you know, that's why I like, you know, come do this type of stuff, like 100%, because I appreciate the dudes doing it.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the dudes who are out here and they're just like, I'm doing it this way.
Yeah.
You know, and
this is it.
And this is it. And that's what I think I'm, you know, mine. You know, that's with the tour and stuff. And it's all self, it's, you know, we're not going to big promoters and shit. We're doing it.
It's wicked.
We're trying to sell it online.
So where can people
If you go on my Instagram, I'm shit at social media. So I'm on Twitter.
Yeah.
And that's just purely releasing. So don't expect funny tweets. I'm sorry. I'm not that guy. If you go Instagram, Jamali Maddox, it's the same with Twitter and all of that. Go on my website and it's a mailing list, and I promise I won't be spamming you with a bunch of bullshit either. I'm not like that.
Because big companies or whatever don't really give a fuck about mailing lists anymore. So all the people who have mailing lists, it's good shit.
Yeah.
Like this guy Rob Alton, who's a comedian and everything, his mailing list is brilliant. Yeah, every now and then he'll sit down for an afternoon and write a long letter and send it out to
Daniel Kitson.
Like, yeah, exactly. They're the mailing list. Mailing list is something I want to be on now, whereas previously it'd be like, oh, I had to get my address.
Now
it's like, oh shit.
So got the mailing list. I'm releasing early tickets. I've got some merch coming. I'm trying to get that merch game up, bro.
I like it. But, I'm all about that merch.
I need to talk to you about some of this. I need to talk to you about this setup, because I'm trying to start my own podcast as well. I bought the H6.
Nice.
To try and get ready. But so if you go on my website, and I'm doing tours across England, UK, doing some dates in America. And it's going to be, you know, it's just going to be some dank comedy, man. It's not going to be no bells and whistles, mate. It's just going to be some good old fashioned talking shit on stage, man.
It's the way it's going to be. Thank you very much for coming on the
show. No, thanks for having me, brother. I'm sorry if it's been boring.
No, I love that we've just hooked it up.
Yeah, definitely,
in under a week. We've just gone, let's do it. You're about Monday, I'm about Monday. All right, cool. See you then.
Bye-bye. Lovely. Thanks for having me, brother.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Jamali Maddox on the Distraction Pieces podcast. If you enjoyed that, he was recently a guest on Ramesh's Hip Hop Saved My Life, which annoyed me slightly because, as I keep mentioning, I've been sitting on this podcast for a bit. So if I hadn't kept having to push it back, I would have beaten Ramesh. But now it looks like I've just copied Ramesh, but it's a great podcast, so go and check that out. Jamali is hitting the road in September. He is at Comedia in Brighton on September 12th. On September 13th, Glee Studio Nottingham. September 14th, Junction 2 Cambridge. September 17th, that's a good 3 days off there, you lazy prick, is the Stand Comedy Club in Glasgow. September 18th is the Stand Comedy Club in Newcastle. September 20th is the Wardrobe in Leeds. September 21st is the Hen and Chicken in Bristol. September 22nd is the Rondo Theatre in Bath. September 25th is the Cookie in Leicester. October 2nd is the Leadmill in Sheffield. October 3rd is the Crescents in York. October 4th is the Hot Water Comedy Club in Liverpool. October 5th is Gorilla in Manchester. Gorilla was picked as one of the top 5 places to drink when Beans on Toast was on the Hardcore Listing podcast, so check that out. October 7th is the Glee Club in Oxford. October 18th is the Slade Rooms in Wolverhampton. October 20th is Derby Theatre in Derby. October 21st is Glee Club Birmingham, which is where my boy Gus Khan does a lot of stuff, so check that out. October 22nd is Club Eifenbach in Cardiff. October 24th is Black Box in Belfast. And the big one, November 3rd. Go along to this. It's his biggest show. It's going to be amazing. It's the Hackney Empire in London. Such a great venue. Such a beautiful historical venue. Yeah, get along to that. November 3rd, Hackney Empire, London. Get your tickets. Thank you for tuning in. As said, I'm going to be back with a little bonus one on Friday. It's a bit shorter than usual, but it's a bonus, so honestly, you're going to love it. Until then, see you later.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.